and Reform. Today we are going to be holding a public hearing on Senate Bill 474. But before we do that, I need to let the committee know that because starting next week, about this time on Wednesdays, on Tuesdays, on every day except Friday, we're going to be having floor sessions. And so the time of this committee needs to be changed. The recommended change would be to Wednesday at 7:30 a.m. So the committee then would run from 7:30 to 9 on Wednesdays. And I will ask the chair of the Senate Revenue Committee to move his committee on Wednesday back from 8:45 to 9 o'clock. Brad, did you hear that? 7:30 on Wednesday, starting next week. Okay. Mr. President, does that meet with your needs?
Sure, whatever, sure.
Okay.
Marjorie will send something out in that regard.
So Marjorie certainly will.
We'll confirm, and we will reconfirm.
And there is Senator Schrader. So, gentlemen, to the dais. 474. The great triumvirate. Senator Morse, why don't you kick things off?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and colleagues. For the record, Frank Morse, Senator representing District 8, Corvallis and Albany. I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you with my good colleagues, Senator Schrader and Senator Westland. And what I would ask to do, since the three of us have not had the opportunity to script this discussion this morning, our schedules have just been like ships in the night going every which way. What I would suggest is that Senator Schrader kind of set the stage for what we are doing and how this bill fits in with other bills that are in process. And then Senator Westland add some comments, and then to actually get into the content of the bill, we might break it up. And I would take the continuous improvement side of the bill, and if you would like to take the front end to discuss. Does that sound reasonable?
That sounds fine.
I mean, we're having to kind of get our cues straight here in public, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
It's your show.
Okay.
Okay, Senator Schrader.
All right, well, I'll just, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Kurt Schrader, Senate District 20, appreciate the opportunity to be here with my colleagues. As you are aware or may not be aware, Senate Bill 474 is actually part of a package of bills that a number of us have introduced from the Senate and the House and encompass a project called Hopeful Reform. This Hopeful Reform package includes Senate Bill 474 that you see before you, that deals with spending and budget reform in the state of Oregon. Senate House Bill 2530 is the tax reform piece that we'll be getting a hearing, hopefully, on the House side. And then we're already moving ahead in this body on the other piece of our package, which is a rainy day fund, a bigger rainy day fund that's more representative of what the needs of the state of Oregon are. So these four pieces, two of which are encompassed in Senate Bill 474, are important, I think, and I think my colleagues think, to really get the state of Oregon's affairs back in order. Any piece alone is insufficient. I think that we have what I think is a nice little presentation that talks about the structural budget gap we have in the state of Oregon right now. And that gap is not a function, won't be cured by establishing a rainy day fund. If we continue to spend the way we've spent in the past, and if we continue to have the revenue flow into the state the way you have in the past, we will still have the very same problems that we faced in the recession from 2001 to 2004. So based on our experiences in ways and means, and based on our experiences in revenue, and six different special sessions, we've come up with this package that hopefully would be a better and stronger answer for how we deal with these types of problems in the future, and indeed help us avoid these problems. Senate Bill 474 is actually a reprise of Senate Bill 470 that passed the Senate last session. The several improvements have been made in 474. The four of us, actually with two other House members, convened some work groups during the interim. We met on three different occasions to refine the elements of 470 to hopefully make the process better. That work group included representatives from business and labor both. And at the end of the day, I believe it was consensus by the legislators as well as those representing business and labor that 474 was a better product and worthy of submission to your committee, Mr. Chair, for you to do with as you wish. Hopefully ultimately pass this out in some form. So I think that's really the background I'd set for that, and then I turn it over to my colleagues.
Thank you. For the record, Senator Ben Westland, District 27. You know, as we go through each legislative session, which everyone on this dais has been through multiple legislative sessions, I think, you know, we all come to better understand just how fragile Oregon's finances are. And what Senator Morris, Senator Metzger, Senator Deckert, myself, and ever-increasing number of legislators are coming to advocate for, actually being apostles for, is a complete fundamental and systemic reform of how Oregon conducts its fiscal affairs. This is not, you know, simply about, you know, a one panacea silver bullet approach. And we see it sort of as the proverbial three-legged stool. How we raise revenue, how we appropriate, spend, and measure those appropriations, and then how we save. How we raise, how we spend, how we save. What the piece you have before you today is the critical middle piece on Senate Bill 474 of how we continuously improve what we are currently doing with regard to the appropriation decision, the matrixing, and the information and the data that we have at our disposal to make a better appropriation decision, and then how we measure those results. It's a key component to this package. And like most packages, most comprehensive solutions to very complex problems, if you don't do all of them, the other two or three or ten, in this case two, are, you know, it's not like they'd be ineffectual, but they don't have, you know, the complete impact. All these pieces go together and leverage one another. I remember visiting Frank Morris in his first term, Senator Frank Morris. And it was early in the session, and this is a testament to his acumen and understanding. We're in his office. He'd been in this building about 20 minutes. And he just looks at me and he goes, "Ben, do you realize how ineffective we are at managing our fiscal affairs?" And then and this isn't just a money plea. And when I say, "You know, I'm looking at this and I think we've got about $1.5 billion structural deficit in our budgets." And I'm going, "Whoa, who is this guy?" It took me about 3 years to figure this out. He figured it out in 20 minutes. Now that comes as no surprise to you at the dais, but I think it speaks to the fundamental and comprehensive problem that we in this body face. You know, what we do is we spend an incredible amount of time, you know, over the minuet of how much each of these budgets get. And in many regards, sure, this is a robust year, but it's not really that robust. And what we really do is we continually fight over the size of the slices of a continually shrinking pie. It isn't just about raising money. It isn't just about how we save. But on 474, it's how we better expend the monies for each of those slices of the pie. I'm here in strong support and ask the committees due consideration for a very significant piece of legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Frank?
Well, by way of introduction and not to belabor the point, the issue that just continually emerges at every juncture in this body deals with the adequacy of revenue and the stability of revenue. And also coupled with that, as has been mentioned, is the discipline that needs to be exercised in the way that we conduct our affairs in the legislative process and the budgeting process to gain greater confidence from the public. But also, it's how we spend the money. And so we're focusing in this bill specifically on the spending and on the budgeting part of the process. But I can think of no greater responsibility that we have as legislators in a role of governance than to build a solid financial footing for the state of Oregon. And it has to do with all four components, as we've been mentioned. It's how we collect, it's how we budget, how we spend, and how we save. And it's pretty simple, but it's hard to do. And that's what we're here for today. So let's lead off with the bill.
Okay, so what the premise here is what we've been doing in the past hasn't been working. What we usually do in this building, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is hang around till the March or preferably the May forecast, see how much money we have, and then in a flurry of action at the end of the day, spend as much of it as we possibly can. Our ending balances are generally insufficient. If we have them, our general purpose of emergency fund is minimal at best, and Wall Street looks at us with our initiative process, kicker laws, and how we've done things and says, bad on you, Oregon, and we're downgraded. And it's just a very, very poor way to do things. I don't think there's too many people in this building or outside this building that were enamored with the closed-door process that basically became the poster child for how we do budgeting in the state of Oregon, where seven people go behind closed doors for 17 days and develop the budget for everybody in the state of Oregon, including to the embarrassment, I think, of the other 83 legislators in this building. That is a bad, bad statement about how the process should not be run in the state of Oregon. So this bill attempts to try and rectify that. The first few sections of this bill talk about developing a new way of budgeting, and that would be sections 1 through 4, basically. Section 1 talks about, rather than spending all the money we have or want to have at the end of the day, up front, the Ways and Means co-chairs recommend to the Legislative Assembly a spending agreement resolution. That resolution would ideally be voted on by March 31st. of the session year. So in the first roughly 80, 90 days of session, there'd be a discussion amongst the members, not just the Ways and Means people, the leadership, everybody, about what should our spending target be. In this Section 1 and Section 2, Section 1C talks about using the factors that the governor has to do when he prepares his budget. We try and encourage the governor to do that. And you'll see on page 4 of the bill, starting on line 14, talks about how the spending target is determined. You can see it's based on factors that are population of the state, inflation, personal income of the state, agency costs attributable to increases in population. It talks about unfunded mandates that need to be taken into account. I think it's very clear in some of the work that we've done that initiative process has taken up almost half of the increased spending in the last 15 years. It's not the legislature, my friends, my colleagues. It's actually the initiative process. That has to be factored in. We need to look at the reserve accounts. And then D, under 5D, you'll see it says basic service and investment needs of the state. All right, so it's not just about the revenues, but what are the basic needs? You'll remember to last session, we actually set our spending agreement above the revenues we had available to us in December. So this is not about just tying it to the December forecast. This is about coming to an agreement by March 31st of the session that based on the needs and revenues available, we think the spending target should be X. All right, the other piece of the budgeting process here, you get down to Section 2, and particularly 2.2, subsection 2, the goal would be after the target set that the different Ways and Means subcommittees referenced on page 2, you see listed A through F, would be given a rough percentage allotment based on that spending target that they would have to work with to decide how much goes to education, general government, human services, natural resources, public safety, transportation, economic development. That wouldn't be cast in stone because there's an opportunity later on for that target to be changed as we are informed by March forecasts, May forecasts, desires, needs, unexpected catastrophes, recessions that hit. We also, under that same Section 2, Sub 4, you can see it just above the Section 3 on that page 2, talks about we'd also set aside some money for a rewards system for agencies that are doing particularly well, either in performance or continuous improvement. And Senator Morris will talk to that. That was suggested by both business and labor members of our work group. Rather than let them keep the money they don't spend type of thing, that has been proven to be not as successful, I guess, as we had thought in our body. So that might be a topic that this committee could entertain and discuss. The hammer is Section 3. Section 3 is what gets most of our policy colleagues nervous because it says, well, you know, how do we make sure the spending resolution occurs? Well, the way we do it in this bill is we suggest that no bills could be enacted until that resolution is passed. That doesn't mean you can't work on the bills. That doesn't mean one side of the bicameral legislature can't pass a bill to the other side. So a lot of work can be done. But it cannot be enacted. That means having it signed by the governor, passed both chambers and signed by the governor. So that's the hammer that we have in here to make sure there's a chance in heck that we actually get this spending resolution enacted. Because it's tough. It's tough to get 90 members to agree that we're going to spend X amount of money for a legislative session. Also in that Section 3, it talks about if we have this target, it works both ways. That target may be seen as somewhat of a cap, but it's also seen as a floor. And this is reminiscent a little bit of what we talked about 2 years ago, that if we actually feel that there's a certain basic need in the state and we acknowledge that there's only a certain amount of revenues the people of the state of Oregon are willing to give us, that should be no more than, no less than, as part of our spending agreement. Section 3, Sub 4, this talks about the changing percentages. Initial percentages may be changed by agreement of the co-chairs of Ways and Means based on the testimony from their subcommittees. In other words, that spending target, we're not omnipotent. We're starting this at the beginning of session. There may be things that come up in terms of the discussion of the subcommittees, and we may want to alter those targets a little bit. And actually, some of the percentage allocations to the relative subcommittees may change somewhat. We're trying to establish here a process. It's not cast in stone, but it's more deliberative, more objective, more thoughtful process to get us from point A at the beginning of the session to point B, hopefully in June, to leave this body. There's also a section in here, Section 4, that talks about what if a lot more money comes in, how would you allocate that? And you can see on page 3, top of the page, line 4, if a lot of money comes in, we suggest that even though it's come in, we stay pretty close to our spending agreement. 25% increases goes to an ending balance, 50% goes to the Education Stability Fund, and 25% might be available for the respective programs and services that people in this body think are essential that didn't get funded maybe under the spending agreement earlier established. Section 3, line 15 on that same page, talks about what if a recession occurs, Senator? How are you going to keep this spending agreement? Well, obviously you can't do that. That would have to be revisited by the body, by the co-chairs of Ways and Means, coming up with a perhaps another suggestion, another resolution of what's a more realistic spending agreement or spending target if you're in the midst of a real serious catastrophic recession. And there's some criteria in here about what would actually constitute a recession, so it's not subjective at the will of the majority of the members of this body. So that's the budgeting piece. I'll skip over to page 6 of this Senate Bill 474. Start at lines 19 and 20. Basically, this is what we're trying to do right now, colleagues. This is what your Ways and Means Subcommittee members, your two-thirds of the Senate and half of the House are trying to do right now, is change the budgeting culture in our state to where it's based on performance and it's based on a prioritized list of services. Rather than coming in and talking about the wonderful things that you've done for little Kurt Schrader, you get him off of drugs and alcohol and get him a fine education, and you want to know how many little Kurt Schraders are there. Is Kurt Schrader representative of 90% success rate, or is he the anomaly that happened to get into one good program and fortunately did it? Or, more importantly, did Kurt Schrader self-report that he's better and meanwhile is having a fine old time back behind closed doors at his house? So these types of things, we actually have performance measures by which we're going to be judging all agencies, all educational programs, and we have a prioritized list of services that those agencies and educational institutions bring to us after having vetted them with the legislators, i.e. representatives of the people of the state of Oregon, that they think are more important. So we think this is a better budgeting process. We think this is a better plan for spending the money. We think this gets us into a situation where we're starting to reduce the structural deficit. As more money comes in, we just don't spend it all. We bank it. We spend what we think is important for that biennium, for the people of the state of Oregon, to fund their service needs for the next 2 years. That's a nutshell version of it, sir.
Okay. Are you ready to take questions?
Well, I think there's another piece called continuous improvement, and I'm sorry to belabor this, but
Mr. Morse.
Yeah, well, thank you. I might add that the drafter and legislative council added some additions here in terms of kind of cleanup language that is a requirement of the governor when he's preparing his recommended budget. So the balance, until you get down to Section 13, is inclusive of some of those suggestions. Section 13, it starts out by putting some teeth into this expectation that we have as legislators for state agencies to think consciously and creatively about how are they going to continually improve their operations to reduce cost and improve quality. And what I would suggest to you today is possibly not necessarily in a replacement, although you'll see in this conceptual amendment that maybe even replacing Section 13, but I'm not sure that that is the direction we should go. But to think differently about how we as legislators interface with agencies and become really agents of change and assisting them in this task of improving operations. My observation serving on Ways and Means is that when we're up there and they're down here, number one, they don't want to be here. That's a given. And there's the dialogue is not meaningful in terms of how we as legislators undergird and support their efforts for continuous improvement. It's by and large a fairly surface level discussion. It's not in an environment that allows you to roll up your sleeves and really go to work on this issue of quality and quality improvement. So the question remains, how can we set a process and a structure in place that really encourages that, where we get on the same side of the fence? And that's essentially what I'm proposing in these amendments. And I would just share with you and read the whereases. And this is a conviction that is born out of experience and the experience of others. Whereas the state cannot legislate excellence, but can expect it, support it, and acknowledge it when it occurs. And whereas excellence is a passion, and when it exists, the legislature should support it fully. We have agencies that come before us that I've seen that I believe there is a passion for excellence. In some cases, it's more latent than it is in other cases. But I think that passion does exist. I think people just, it's been my experience in management, is that people want to do the right thing. They really do. We don't have laggards. What we have are processes that create laggards, that create mistakes, that create excessive expenses and delays. And it's the processes that generally create problems. It's not the people. People are good. So how do we as legislators create a process where we're on the same side helping agencies to do their job better? And I would suggest that is the intent of this legislation to create a process that will oversee the journey to excellence and will encourage the most vital aspects of Oregon state government to be managed at a world-class level. When was the last time you heard that word, that phrase, in conjunction with Oregon state government? Have you ever heard it? World-class level. And that's the expectation that we should hold as legislators, as in a role of governance in this body, is to expect world-class performance. The suggestion is here that we create a committee on performance excellence made up of members of the Senate and the House, the executive branch, including management and frontline leadership, as well as directors of the participating departments that are identified performance excellence initiatives. The key tasks would be to identify, number one, targeted agencies that are really ripe for a quality initiative process. And those should be the agencies that are providing the most crucial services to the state of Oregon. Probably that's the place to start. It wouldn't be on the agencies that we have three FTEs in. While those agencies are important to their constituents, they're not where you would start this process. And the committee would support the departments in terms of helping them conduct assessments, planning and prioritization of key initiatives, consulting, developing internal capacity to continue with great change. And the participating departments would then report back to this committee on performance excellence at intervals defined by the committee. But then once a project for improvement is completed, we need to stand on a stool and proclaim to the world that Oregon State Government is a world-class organization, and these are the reasons why, and let the public know. Confidence in us as legislators and confidence in state government is probably at an all-time low. Maybe it just is always at an all-time low. But how do we change that, and how do we build that confidence? This is one way to do that. A second function in this journey to excellence and world-class leadership, the committee would help agencies focus continuously on what we would describe as seven areas of performance. It has to do with leadership, strategic planning, customer and market focus, measurement, analysis, and knowledge management, human resources focus, process management, and then results. And that's what we want to measure in the ways and means process, the performance measurements. Have the results been what they said they would be and what we want them to be? This will require the most vital, these critical departments or programs or agencies to have long-range plans and short-term priorities, have performance measures that tell them how well their vital systems are performing, work with their disparate customer groups to identify how to improve their systems, identify ways to make their core processes run better, faster, and cheaper, have mechanisms in place to develop the skills of employees, managers, and executives, show measurable results for the investment taxpayers have made in them. What we would have initially, we would have the committee working to develop a framework of expectations and to define the roadmap and a scorecard that shows progress. The scorecard could define the dimensions of excellence and show what reasonable progress could be achieved over a three-year period. The committee should be concerned with, does the agency have a strategic plan and how they actually use the plan? Do they have performance measurements? How do they use the information? And that's one of the things that is lacking currently in our ways and means process is we hear the key performance measurements, they're listed and they're approved, But we don't have the time, quite frankly, to go into the depth of understanding to make sure that, that what we have said are the key performance measurements are actually integrated into the systems and the processes that they do day in and day out, so that it creates for them the roadmap and the benchmarks along the way, the milestones and the benchmarks to measure against. And of course, what improvements are occurring from the use of the information. What this committee would do would support agency efforts to acquire the methods, tools, and skills to achieve each dimension of excellence, which may include acquired services from consulting and training organizations, universities, loaned executives, etc. And then I won't go on through the balance of this. I think you've got the gist of where this is headed. But this committee would be a committee on performance excellence would be a very, very strategic part of this continuous improvement initiative that we think that we need to raise the bar for state government. And the key is, how do we take away that adversarial role that we have? My perception is when agencies come forward, the worst thing that they want to talk about, the thing they don't want to talk about, is the problems that they have, because they tend to get politicized and they tend to get embarrassed and abused. Every enterprise has its opportunities for improvement. Every enterprise. And when you talk about opportunities for improvement, the obvious thing is there are some issues that can be improved. And this would create a process much different than we have today. It would be in conjunction with and cement the process for key performance measurements. And it would strengthen that whole process. But it's an entirely different dynamic than we have considered in the past. So, Mr. Chair, colleagues, with that I would conclude my remarks, and we all three would welcome comments and questions.
Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. I really appreciate all this. I think this is fantastic, and Senator Weston, you're true. Senator Morris was making those comments, I think, his first week around here, so you're very on. It's just a few curiosity questions. I really appreciate the hammer. I think that this building works under a false sense of pressure, meaning the pressure isn't to get done on time. The pressure isn't no means no or dead means dead. The pressure is who can wear out whom by being here the longest. So I appreciate that, but as I heard the presentation, it seems like we are still very concentrating on the March and May revenue forecast. Did your work group suggest or discuss changing that focus of us agreeing on a forecast at beginning a session and making all this stuff happen sooner, or changing the way that that forecast is made like other states have?
Well, I don't believe this really relies on the forecasts to make the decision. We tried to pick a time frame, and it's certainly up to the committee to discuss that and alter the time frame. But what would be a reasonable time frame to allow members, both from policy committees, ways and means committees, and leadership, come up with a basic framework for revenues that they think they're going to have for the next 2 years? The hammer section is March 31st, so that's before the May forecast. It's probably after the March forecast. But it's also, I tried to emphasize, obviously inexpertly so, it's based on needs, too. So it really isn't forecast-driven. It's based on a little bit of how much of the revenue you can expect to have reasonably. But it just at the same time, you're supposed to be putting up what do you think the needs are, the basic needs for the people of the state of Oregon for that biennial period. And you weigh those two, and you come up with a number, and that's your target. That's the target, and you move from there.
Let me take a stab at that as well. And I think I heard a different nuance to Senator Atkinson's question. And part of that is reflective of how we've always done business in the normal human, nature, our expectations. Gosh, What's in the March? What's in the May revenue forecast? What's the expectation? Our expectation has always been, God, that'll smooth our way out of the building. What this attempts to do is add a rational set of criteria to the decision-making process, not only what we do with excess revenues or in case there's a shortfall. What it tries to do is change the culture of our behavior. And I don't know if that better answers your question.
Senator, actually, I think that's exactly what I'm talking about, because our culture of the legislature for the last 30 years, we haven't given away our authority as much as we've allowed it to rust and go away. And one of the things, the mantra around here, especially by us with the lobby, is, well, just wait to the March forecast, wait to the May forecast. And we do this huge, I mean, it's just... It's not about kids. It's not about anything. It's about elections and budgets and all that other stuff. So I appreciate that. I think that's a huge signpost. But it brings me to my second thing, and this is a conversation the president and I have had multiple times, and actually in the interim too, is the fact that we lack an end date. I'm very much intrigued by the hammer. Do you think that this reform would work if this legislature had a hard end, it's over, it's dead, no more delaying, end date?
May I respond to that? Yes, I believe that it would, and it would, I think, create the process to get you effectively to that end date. One of the things that, having served on the Public Commission on the Legislature and talking about annual sessions, became so obvious to me that unless we address the issues that we're talking about in this bill in annual sessions, we have to have an improved process. Otherwise, when do we get out of here? It's the end date. It's the process that gets us thoughtfully through that, but yet still provides a mechanism to make adjustments at the very end and get the support of the body early on with guidance to Ways and Means that said, this is what we want you to do. Can you get 90 members to all agree on what that spending resolution is? No. But it's a matter of getting to that center of gravity and then moving forward with a process. If we continue as we have in the past and go into annual sessions, we will be an embarrassment to ourselves and to the state of Oregon. Absent something like this that creates a more disciplined process.
Just one follow-up, and I'll stop. I think the end date is actually, it's critical, and I think this framework does get us there. But if we pass this without a hard end date, and we allow the conversation in our own culture as a legislature to become, it's a target. What we enable special interests to do is say, okay, the game now changes from the target to increasing the amount. And we built in the incentive to play the delay game even longer, which ruins our reputation, erodes our legislative authority, et cetera. I think having that hard second hammer is critical.
Other questions? Senator Vaki.
I think regardless of how anybody falls with regard to support or not or reform to what you've presented here, I think this is a great example of how this 74th Assembly is taking very seriously looking at itself from within. And I think the effort is tremendous, so I thank the senators for doing it. I had just two questions, more picky questions about language, but to help me with the intent of what you're trying to do. First, on page 3, up at line number 7, which is the sub C paragraph. This is the section for folks who are listening or watching that deals with 25% of increase in revenues being appropriated by the co-chairs. The language used is that the increase shall be appropriated rather than language that the co-chairs will make a recommendation to the full committee for a vote. And I'm wondering if your intent was that the co-chairs would have complete discretion to appropriate, or if that would still be subject to a vote of the committee.
It would, Mr. Chair, Senator, be the latter.
Okay. Did you pick that up? Okay.
And then on page 4, line 29, where we're talking about factors in budgeting and the basic service and investment needs of the state, certainly something that we would want to consider. I'm very taken by what Senator Morris said with regard to shooting for the highest of all possible standards and how we generate revenue and then dole it out for services. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your perception of what basic service means, and then maybe also make some comments on why maybe we shouldn't shoot for always funding at a level of excellence rather than at a level of minimum services provided.
Senator Westland, you want to try that?
Let me take the latter half of Senator Vakian's question first, and that is, this is a little bit of a, we all face this, you know, a little bit of a yin and yang dilemma that we all have gone through in this process multiple, too many times, session after session. It's, where do you, quote, put, I don't want to say invest, but where do you put these scarce, precious resource? Look, in the budgeting process, there's kind of two, you know, schools of thought. One of them is that they are investments. This is a strictly an ROI calculation. The other school of thought is that budgets are moral documents. They reflect our values, whether that be the best, you know, numerical return on investment we can get. The truth is really someplace in the middle. And so while this bill, 474, concentrates on maximizing our ability to make, you know, those types of decisions, we cannot leave the other two components of this, the other two legs of the school, of this stool, adequacy and stability of revenue, off the table, nor can we, you know, not consider how we save the stability portion. All three of these are equally important in, you know, this presentation. We speak 474. That's our focus here today. Please don't lose sight that we're also trying to address, which I think is the answer to your question, you know, the adequacy and stability of available dollars to put into these budgets, whether you consider them an investment or a reflection of a moral value.
Senator Schrader?
I'll just go real quick. We struggled in Section 7, Sub 5, to find the right balance. I think Senator Vakian hit the nail on the head, Mr. Chair, between the programmatic factors by which you deal with a budget, inflation, caseload, reserve funds, initiatives, and balance that rather basic fiscal analyst approach to budgeting with how much money do we have to spend? You know, what is the will of the taxpayers, of the people of the state of Oregon, to spend this next few years? But that shouldn't be the sole determiner. It was recognized by the work groups and by us. That should not be the sole determiner, just the amount of money that's supposedly coming in based on a forecast that is dubious at best. But the other key factor is basic needs and services. Now, that could be adequate needs and services. Could be excellence and needs and services. And I think that's a debate that I'd welcome this committee and the Ways and Means Committee to have about where should we be in our targeting and how do we juxtapose those three factors. So I think you've raised a very good question, Senator.
If I may add a little different perspective on this language. What we have today is a budget gap, and it persists even with the increase in revenue. And I would pose this question: how many people in the Assembly are aware of the accumulative impacts of unfunded, mandated voter initiatives? You know, intuitively, you may feel it. Measure 5, Measure 11, 47, 50, 66, 99. You may intuitively feel that, but as Senator Schrader said, how many people are really aware of the $7 billion increase in spending in the last 15 years? $3.4 billion is directly driven by what voters have said to do, which means that you thin the soup and thin the soup. Mm-hmm. What this language does is it allows the process to shine a bright light on those factors that have built up and accumulated to create this budget gap and create a level, I think, of education and awareness. It's just so clear that this budget gap persists and it will likely continue to persist unless we address the other parts of this comprehensive fiscal reform. But this language really allows you to understand and to educate as to what has happened historically. Take that data today and what should we be doing in that environment. And that's all in the context of, I know, in my own experience in business, there was never enough capital to do everything that all of my divisions wanted done. It just doesn't exist. And that happens in state government, so you have to have that discipline to get you there. But we do have some structural underlying deficiencies in our system today that is causing great stress on these basic institutions that we, as you would suggest, Senator Vakin, we would expect a higher degree of excellence than what we have today.
Additional questions? I've got a couple.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Senator Westland.
May I put in context what Senator Morse just said in terms of the impact of the initiative process? I think we all know it's had an impact, and what I'm about to say is it's not a debatable point. It's just, this is fact. Greatest economy in the history of the planet, the 90s. Oregon's revenue, with a tax structure that's too responsive, it grew an amazing 100%. It grew from $5 billion to $10 billion. $5 billion growth. Of that $5 billion growth, all of us, through the initiative process, either the tax cuts, 547/50, or the unfunded spending mandates, 11, 44, 66, 99. Those combinations, we spent $4.3 billion of that $5 billion growth. And then we entered the worst recession in this state's history, where Oregon's revenues fell further and faster than any state in the nation, save one, Alaska, and they've got a hydrocarbon-based revenue structure. But our revenues fell further and faster than any state in the nation. Fell over 20%. That is not a way to run any business, any railroad, or fund the services that Oregonians so justifiably and rightly deserve and that they depend on, all of us. So I just wanted to put this, impact of the initiative process, volatility of our revenue structure maybe into a little context. That's what we're really talking about here.
Couple of things. Your target, your spending target, total aggregate spending target, March 31st, what I heard you saying is that spending target is not really based on anticipated revenues, but is based essentially on need.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, a juxtaposition of both of those, but need is a key factor. It is not just the available revenue.
And that, in fact, that spending target might exceed anticipated revenues.
Yes, Mr. Chair, it may also be less than anticipated revenues.
Right. If, in fact, it exceeds anticipated revenues, then I would assume that there would be an attempt to raise revenue to meet the need.
That would be correct.
So you set your target, and your target exceeds anticipated revenues, and so in our collective wisdom, we come up with some revenue-raising ideas to close the gap, and you can't get 31 and 16, or no, for revenues it takes more than that. You can't get 36 and 18. Somehow things break down. You can't get the votes to raise the revenue. What do you do then?
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's a good scenario, an interesting scenario. I would point out that two things can happen, obviously. One is listed in the bill, and I didn't get to that on page 2, section 3, sub 6, line 37, that if we come to a spending agreement and that spending agreement becomes abrogated for whatever reason, frankly, then you dissolve into chaos. You can dissolve the joint ways and means process. Things go to heck in a hurry, and we end up in the worst of all situations that Senator Morse alluded to a little while ago. There is no way, I don't think, you can force people to do certain things. This is the Legislative Assembly. We're all duly elected individuals. We have things we like to do, things we don't like to do. And so it is possible that the spending agreement would not occur. I don't think you can write a bill that guarantees outcome. I will point out, though, Mr. Chair, that 2 years ago we had this exact situation you described. Our spending target was $400 million more than our available revenues in December. At the end of the day, somewhat fortuitous, you know, with the revenues that came in, some creative thoughts about how to use the common school fund, some other issues that came up in the course of that biennium. This assembly, Democrats, Republicans, it was, you know, Democrats were in control of the Senate at that time, the Republicans were in control of the House, we were able to meet that spending target. So I have a lot of faith in this assembly when the chips are down and we come to some agreements and people's wills and needs are respected. So I think that we'll end up doing okay, sir.
Well, you've certainly attacked one of the major building blocks of this process. There's another one that this committee is going to have to look at that's interrelated to a degree, and that is the whole legislative council situation. You know, that we all know hasn't worked very well this session for a number of reasons. Compressed timeline, salaries that we pay those people, the turnover, all the new people we had, and my understanding is there's a couple of them that are resigning, so we're going to have to replace a couple more. So the whole use and abuse of legislative council, the introduction of bills, unlimited introduction of bills, flooding them on a compressed timeline, we need to attack that issue, I believe, as well as what you've outlined here. And so I would hope, if the Senate President allows us, that we will be having some discussions and perhaps some recommendations with respect to the introduction of bills and legislative council and that whole process, because it hasn't worked very well this session. And I don't know, it's a concern. I don't know whether we'll do that in our letter with 5520, whatever, 22, might do it there, but this committee is going to be having that discussion sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. Are there additional questions for our colleagues? Yes. Senator Courtney.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, gentlemen. I'm just curious, the spending agreement. Now, Senator Schrader, you've told me the co-chair's budget is going to come out in a couple of weeks, correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator President, yes, I hope so.
Okay. Is the co-chair's budget referenced in here anywhere? I was reading through it, and I haven't made it, where does the co-chair's budget fit in here regarding the spending agreement?
Mr. Chair, I defer to my colleagues a little on this. We do not reference the co-chair's budget directly in here at this point in time. I think there's some suggestion that the co-chairs would try and work with the committee itself and craft the budget, but it does not reference the co-chair's budget.
So you don't necessarily intend to wait till you have the spending agreement before you issue a co-chair's budget. A co-chair's budget could come out prior to the spending agreement being agreed to. Is that correct?
I guess that's correct. We really didn't discuss
okay.
that issue, sir.
I understand a number of budgets are moving to the floors, the House and Senate already around, at least I heard last week, as many as 10. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senate President, yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay. If we adopt this law, would those budgets be moving? Let's say we haven't reached the spending limit because it lives us to March 31. It doesn't say on March 31. It says prior to March 31. Would those budgets still be moving at this time if we had this in effect?
Mr. Chair, Senate President, yes, the answer is yes, they would. Because the hammer is about enactment of the bill, which means that the budget bills could pass the chamber. It just can't be enacted, which means they'd have to pass the other chamber and be signed by the governor. So it would not slow down the process for both budget bills or policy bills as we currently have it. You just couldn't have a bill signed by the governor before March 31st. Does that answer your question, sir?
So, even though we don't have a spending agreement, we could still move bills fully evaluated on the subs and out of the full ways and means to the House and Senate floors. They could actually be voted on the House and Senate floors, but as long as the governor wouldn't be allowed to sign them until this became effective.
That's my understanding, sir. You might want to get ledge counsel to get the exact derivation of enactment, but I think that, colleagues, isn't that what our advice was from LC?
Mr. Chair and Senator Courtney, what we are needing in this process is a roadmap. And what you heard in Ways and Means last Friday in opposition by some members was a lack of definition to see how all of these things roll up and what the impacts are. You know, if you've got a few million dollars here and there, sometimes that can be significant for some agencies and some budgets. So what this would be, I believe, would be the co-chair's budget would become the budget resolution document that is floated out to the body to either support or reject. And why we put in here March 31, there's nothing that keeps that document from being floated out much earlier for the co-chairs to submit that. And it's a guidance document. So that, you know, I'm on Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means. There's a lot of money that's going to go through there, you know, and I'd love to know how that all fits into the big picture. And I think every member on Ways and Means and every member of the Assembly would love to know how it fits in the big picture. And that's really what we're talking about here, is creating the process to have the big picture, and then you delegate to Ways and Means a more meaningful role in allocating, with the co-chair's guidance, how those monies are actually going to be appropriated. So I don't know whether that answers your question.
Well, but Senator Morris, Senator Schroeder, Senator Weston, I'm not taking issue with this at all. I'm just trying to figure out, since you've used the words interface fit, I'll use the word interface and blends, how this blends in with SCR1, which is a map that we have said, both in the House and the Senate, we're going to use to get out of here no later than June 29th. And we've said we're going to do it according to, we're going to shut down committees. It's laid out there, different timelines. So I know, and I'm relieved to know, bills are moving towards the House and Senate floor as we speak. I'm very pleased about that, because we got to shut this thing down in June, which has not been our habit for quite a while now for a lot of reasons. So now we have this. Let's say this is law. I'm just trying to figure out what this does to a co-chair's budget, an official, which is detailed. What this does to a co-chair's budget, as well as ways of moving budgets to the floor, even though we haven't reached an agreement yet on a spending agreement. That's all I'm trying to figure out, how you do it. And also, I just could ask questions about other fund budgets. Does this have any reference at all? This is general fund. Does this have a spending agreement? Is this any reference to other fund budgets and things? Are they allowed? They're different. We can still move those kinds of budgets. So I'm not trying to confuse this situation. I found myself thinking of a co-chair's budget when I looked at this. I know budgets are moving to the floor, Senator Morris. With that, in other words, do we have to wait until we have the spending agreement before we have a co-chair's budget? That's my question. And before we can move any budgets or vote on any budgets in the House Senate floor. That's all. The next thing I want to ask is the area of recession, because that allows this to be modified. And it says you're going to use a certain article of the Oregon Constitution to trigger whether or not you have a recession. That'll tell you whether you have a recession, right? That's what's in here, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. What I need to know then is the following. Let's say we have a recession, as Article 15 allows. Okay. So we're going to modify the spending agreement. Do you do it by modifying the total amount of money in the spending agreement, or you do it by bill on an agency budget? For example, we come up with a spending agreement per this sometime in March. And here we go, and before we go out in June, and I'm hoping that becomes put in the Constitution, that is, we meet annually according to how we've set up SCR1 with somebody. We have a recession, so we're going to modify. Do we have to go back and modify the overall number, or can we do it through one agency budget, i.e. we have a human resource budget, let's say, that comes out in May, that in some way forces us to recognize the recession, if you understand it's human resource. Is that how you do it, or you have to go back and do the whole number? Do you understand my question?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe I do. And I think those are good questions. And the answer is we're not that prescriptive.
Okay.
I'd be interested in the wisdom of the committee on that.
Okay.
We do not. And actually, all the packages that Senator Westland, Senator Morris, myself referred to, while they seem fairly detailed, there's a lot of room for hopefully you all and the people of the state of Oregon to put some, you know, flesh on the bones of this thing. I mean, we tried to be pretty straightforward, but I think that's, you're raising excellent questions, and I hope this assembly helps line out. How would you modify that? What would be the technique? What would be feel is appropriate? We're all from Ways and Means, so I'm really interested in what you all think, if I may, because a lot of you are not on Ways and Means, and that would be very instructive to us. We oftentimes don't talk and communicate very well. So I think good questions. I'd be listening to the wisdom of this committee on how the co-chair's budget would fit into this. I have no preconceived notions. I think Senator Morris spoke pretty well about the roadmap. We have some general ideas. But the most important point, Mr. Chair, Mr. President, would be that bills continue to move. They just can't be enacted. So it would not slow down the process. We could be doing exactly what we're doing right now in Ways and Means. And you don't. And I would say, just for the committee's edification, frankly, the people at large, that the budgets that are moving now are moving because they're smaller budgets that would just clog the pipeline if we didn't move them. They're also, for lack of a better term, de minimis amounts of general fund, so they do not impact the overall spending limit or target or whatever that we would come up with in March or 31st. And that date's not cast in stone either. I mean, this committee and the wisdom of the body is to pick a slightly different date than March 31st. Hope it's not May, but sometime early in the session, that after we've had some appropriate time to look at our situation. I'm open to that, and I think members of this committee are also.
Just one more point then.
Sure.
Since the recession occurs, you reference occurs, I'm talking about your bill, after we reach an agreement on the spending agreement, but before the end of the session, end of the legislative session, and it's referring to the legislative session in which the spending agreement took place. So that would be, in this case, June 29th,
That's
not
correct.
February 08.
That's correct.
Then it also goes down to say you can also look to reach a modification of the spending agreement if initiatives are adopted by the people after the effective date of the spending agreement, but before the end of the legislative session. The only thing I'm going to warn you about there, this is my experience, is that means you have a very small area in which you have initiatives that could affect you. The truth is initiatives can get on the ballot after that, still within our two-year budget situation, because we're still using a two-year budget. The recession could hit you, you know what I mean? Because basically, if we agree to this in March, because I think we will take that amount of time, I'm talking about basic human nature, and we're out of here at the end of June, there's an awful lot of time after that in which a recession could be triggered and our initiative thing could come in. And I'm just curious, again, I don't have to answer this. This is just my experience of dealing with this body, especially the special sessions, how quickly you can get hit with a recession, if you know what I'm talking about. Whether or not this modification language allows for those kinds of dynamics to take place. And that's all I'm saying. I just think it's so tightly drawn that to the extent that you say you can only change your modification by within 2 or 3 months, that's what you're saying. You're only allowing April, May, and June. That's the only time you could change this modification. And the lawyer's coming out that the way this thing is written, regardless of recessions taking place after that or initiatives, I'm not sure it should be that tightly drawn in terms of modification, if you understand my point. Like, for example, just let me finish.
Sure.
In February of 08, does the modification still work for that period of time? You know what I'm saying? Even though something's happened after we signed a die that would trigger a recession or some kind of initiative got on there in November of 07. And that's, I'm not trying to complicate your lives. These are questions that are coming to my mind as I look at this and view some of my experiences, how quickly something can hit this body. And then you got to settle a spending agreement that we agreed to. So again, not trying to mess you up. Great work. Appreciate you allowing me this long discussion. My mind was just thinking through this, and I was making notes as I tried to read what you tried to do here and comprehend the nature of it. Thank you, gentlemen.
I believe that initiatives can only be on the ballot in even years in November, in which case they wouldn't take effect until the last, the last quarter of the of any particular biennium. Is that correct?
They could take,
if they're on the ballot in November, they could take effect 30 days after passage, so December of 08, so they would only be in effect for approximately the last quarter of any particular biennium.
Could I ask about a referral?
Yeah, so you'd get a petition to refer that could...
There's 30.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mr. Chair, may I humbly ask your... permission to leave the dais because I have constituents that have come a great distance over a very snowy pass to sit down with me 20 minutes ago.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing with us.
Appreciate that.
Can I make one comment, Mr. Chair?
Senator Schrader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To President Courtney's point about drawing this tightly, certainly that was not our intent, and if that's the way it's worded here, that's probably a fault of ours and not being clear with the drafting agent on this. And I would encourage you, because Senator Courtney and you, Mr. Chair, and others raised good points, have the LC come up and testify and talk with you about the wording, and we'll get it right.
Senator Morse and I will work on it with Marjorie and anybody else we need to bring in, and any members of the committee that have suggested amendments. I'd love to hear about that. This will be up again in, what, 2 weeks? 3 weeks?
When you schedule it, sir.
Whenever I schedule it. Not next week, though.
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, committee.
Is there anybody in the audience that wanted to be heard on Senate Bill 474? Seeing anybody, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 474. Next week, Marjorie, we are doing what?
Mr. Chair, I'm not quite sure yet. That's our first Wednesday morning meeting.
I thought we were back to...
We were going to talk about legislator compensation.
That's what I thought.
Yep.
We're still doing that?
We're waiting for the bill.
So provided we get the bill, we'll be dealing with the elected official compensation, that omnibus bill. That also deals with things like use of campaign money and so on. And we will meet a week from tomorrow at 7:30 a.m. And the room will notify you as to what room that is. Okay, we're adjourned.